The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect lore cast. I'm N7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Specters, how is everyone doing? It is I, your host, N7 the Legend, back with another episode of the Lorecast because the show must go on. It is a new year with a new season of the Mass Effect Lorecast. And joining me today for the first time as my co-host is Genesis. Genesis, welcome aboard.
Hello.
It's our first show together. What do you want to talk about? We didn't decide before today, because we had absolutely zero preparation whatsoever. This is what you have to look forward to, by the way, if you continue listening to this show. But yeah, what do you want to talk about today, Genesis?
So I hate to actually you right out the gate, but I've been on the Mass Effect Lorecast 39 times now.
Who's
36
counting?
Of those. Me, my bank account.
Okay, that's fair. Yes, if you recognize Genesis's voice, that is because she has been on a lot of our episodes, not the least of which defending Caden. But you'll come to find out the depths of her love for Caden are probably just as much, if not more, than my depths of love for Ashley. But yeah, that's why you might recognize her voice. And if you don't, if you're just joining the Lorecast, then good. We're glad that you're here. So Genesis, you also have some experience talking about Tally, right? And not just Mass Effect, but other shows. You host other shows on the network.
That I do. I have talked about Tally, Caden, Ashley, all of the Mass Effect romances on my other show, Two Girls, One Ship, where we analyze, rate, and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer. And we've covered all of the Mass Effect squadmates.
Okay. No wrong answers, except for all of them, except for one. Who is the best romance?
Ooh. That's kind of tough, especially for me, Garrus. I have to say Garrus, but just because of the emotional depth that really, really hits.
Okay, Garbus is an acceptable answer. Yeah, I'll give you that one. You get a point. The points don't mean anything. But you know what? I decided that in order for us to kind of show the audience to you and also you to the audience, why don't we make a game show?
Okay.
A new host touches the beacon, Genesis. Come on up to the Citadel's Only You Know Me, the game where you tell us about yourself and we listen.
That's great. Let's do it. Let's go.
Okay. So, in the interest of making you as uncomfortable as humanly possible in your first feature debut to our listeners, I'm going to be putting you in the hot seat with a list of Mass Effect questions. And remember, there's only one right answer, so no pressure. Number one, what's your go-to coffee shop order?
Have I been to this coffee shop before?
No. Brand new coffee shop. You don't know what's good.
All right. Then I got to get the straight black coffee. I have to know how good your bean is in order for me to know what I'm going to want.
Fair. Yep. Always good to inquire about the beans. Your hangover cure. What is your hangover cure go to? And again, assuming you do not know what's good here.
Okay. Well, my hangover cure is Jack in the Box, the extreme sausage sandwich. It's two sausage patties, melted cheese, and an egg. It's carbs. It's grease.
It's grease. Yeah, there you go.
It's what you need.
It's what you need. Okay, so that is a perfect segue into my next question. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Please defend your argument.
It absolutely is not a sandwich. A sandwich is defined by two pieces of bread, no matter what type of bread it is, whether it's a bun, whether it's anything like that. But a hot dog bun specifically is joined. So therefore, it is only one piece.
So you're telling me if I rip apart the hot dog bun on purpose, I can therefore transform a hot dog into a sandwich?
I still don't think it counts because that's not how it was originally intended.
Okay. I will let you off the hook with that one, but I do want to know, as I'm sure everyone else wants to know, how did you get started with Mass Effect?
Okay, there we go. There's a Mass Effect question. I started with Mass Effect because I had just completed yet another Skyrim run and figured I needed something new. So I took the easy way out and Googled it, what to play after Skyrim. A list popped up of Fallout 4, Mass Effect, and Dragon Age. I was like, ooh, Bethesda to Bethesda. I could totally play Fallout. But then I was also like, do I really want to start a game series at game number 4? No, absolutely not. So Fallout got knocked off the list. I installed Dragon Age. I started playing it, kind of fell in love with it, but then I was like, I really do not want to play another medieval setting, high fantasy game. I literally just put another 300 hours into frickin' Skyrim. I don't want to do another Skyrim. So I installed Mass Effect. And wow. Okay. That's what I needed.
That's the good stuff. All right. And speaking of that, when did you know that this game series had its claws in you? Was there a specific moment, or was it just kind of like, okay, there was?
Yeah, there was a moment, and it was actually Ashley that did it for me.
Whoa, Inception Foghorn. I don't have the sound effect on me right now, otherwise I'd cue it, but go on.
Okay, so once you finally figure out how to get off the Citadel, and you're on the Normandy, and you are this new Spectre, and you are taking the True Helm for the first time, and you are interacting with the hero motivational speech. You can be the rough badass with it. You can play within the guidelines, or you can shape and mold your crew to be like, this is not just about humanity. It is about all of us. So going through Shepard's first Paragon-y speech to the crew, and then at the end of it, you get what almost looks like a cutscene of Rex and Ashley and Garrus and the galaxy map behind you. The music swells. And I was hooked.
You're like, okay, it's time to go bang some aliens. and it's also time to go land on some uncharted worlds. No, I know the exact scene that you're talking about, because that is, I remember feeling in that moment like, okay, now I want to go see where I can go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked into it at that point. If I hadn't found my way off of the Citadel, though, I don't know if I would have played.
Fair.
It's so long.
That was not the best level design, and there was not really any quest markers like in Skyrim. And also, you played this game like much after its release, so you were used to the creature comforts of later games.
Yeah, I didn't play it until, 2021? I started playing it only a couple of months before Legendary Edition came out. So I was pretty late to the game.
And you were still hooked. I think that says a lot about the game. But all right, that's how you started. Why don't you go ahead and tell me about your most recent playthrough? What kind of shepherd was that? Was it a Paragon shepherd, a Renegade shepherd? I know like people tend to start Paragon and then kind of shift more Renegade as they go through. But what about your most recent one?
My most recent completed or the one that I'm playing through right now?
Let's go with the one that you're playing through right now.
Okay, she is a brand new shepherd. I brought up that scene because I just played that like 2-3 days ago. And that scene really reminded me of, oh yeah, this is why you really got into it. I got a new PC, not all my save files ported over, so I've got little bits and pieces, so I started a brand new shepherd. She's kind of my canon run right now. I'm redoing all of my canon choices. So she's going to be a Renegon. I definitely lean more Renegade than I do Paragon. She's going to romance Caden in one and then go Garrus. And I have all the decisions that I know I want to make.
This is perfect because I feel like my canon shepherd is a Paragade. So we have you on like the inverse. But what would you say really like solidifies your shepherd as a Renegon? As in, like, tell me about some of your canon, your biggest canon choices.
Ooh, okay. I know that I will always allow Garrus to shoot Harkin, no matter the situation, because he deserves it. I love pulling the Renegade interrupts. I prefer to get angry about a situation rather than try to play the peaceful mediator. I feel like maybe I play peaceful mediator a little bit too much in my own life, and so therefore playing it in a video game is an outlet for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you fantasize about being a Krogan.
A little bit. Matriarch Theta is my true identity.
Well, by the way, for everyone, I say that not just as like Genesis's co-host, but also her friend. So I think I know enough about her to know that she has certain Krogan-like tendencies. So no matter how many times you play through any of the games, what is the one decision that no matter what your playthrough is like, you just cannot bring yourself to do it differently?
The Genophage. I have always and will always cure the Genophage.
Respectable. And what's your reasoning behind that?
I think it just has to do with messing with people's genetics and taking away their ability to have children. I think for like my own personal journey, it took over a year for me to have my child. And so I've gone through that struggle, and to know that there is an entire race who goes through that every single time the entire race tries to conceive. Hell no.
So that one cuts you like that's an uppercut under the ribs, that quest line. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that with me and with us. I am going to do my due diligence and ask you now, this isn't in the show notes, by the way, so she doesn't know this is coming. What is then your preferred ending to the original trilogy?
Destroy.
Okay.
Destroy.
All right. I had figured since you said that you were against modifying anybody's genetics, I had figured that that was probably the option, considering I did not think you were a canon control person. That would be off the wall. I would actually, if anyone's listening right now and your canon ending is control, I want to hear about it. Please leave a comment, and I would love to hear your justification, because I think it only constitutes a very small amount. But we're both canon destroy people here. That being said, I think I've played every single ending now.
Mm-hmm. Synthesis, destroy, control, and...
Refuse.
Oh, refuse.
Yeah, and then there's also, the terrible, there's the varying levels of destroy, right? And you have the perfect destroy, mm-hmm. the really horrible destroy, and I think there's, a not-so-bad but not-so-perfect destroy as well. I've gotten all of them so far, and the control one is always creepy. But all right. So we agree on the destroy thing, but what is your most unpopular Mass Effect hot take? What is the thing about Mass Effect that when you say it, you will get inmate Avengers pointed at your face?
Do I have to? 'Cause I don't want that.
Yes. This is critical for anybody to find a kindred spirit within you, because I guarantee you, no matter what you say, there is going to be someone listening to this that's like, I feel vindicated now. I feel emboldened that someone else with a platform even thinks the same way that I do.
All right, buddy. You asked for it.
I did. Literally.
Jacob Taylor is not a bad romance option. The shepherd who chooses to romance him is a bad person.
Ooh, okay. This is muy caliente. I want to hear more about this. Why do you feel like Jacob is not in the wrong here? I mean, you and I have both seen, I don't know how many jokes and comments online about people, just throw Jacob out the airlock, right? There's a whole lot to unpack in there. We're not going to touch that right now. But why do you feel like Jacob is not to blame for the way that that romance dissolves?
He tells you out the gate, no, Shepard, I don't want to be in a relationship with you. You are my commanding officer, Shepard. I don't want to date you. Jesus, Shepard, you're really pushing this relationship, and you're hot. I'll admit to it. Fine, you wore me down. You tore down my walls. I guess I'll sleep with my commanding officer, because she's really put me in this position.
Which position would that be?
This. From the vid, at least two.
I'm sorry, go on.
It's all about the prize. So once the Mass Effect 2 is over and then you meet back up with him in 3, he's like, yeah, Shepard, I knew that our relationship wasn't going to work out. You were stuck on Earth. I took time to self-reflect and realize that that wasn't the type of relationship that I wanted to be in. Yes, it would have been better if I had broken up with you in person or on comms or something, but you were literally in jail and uncontactable. That's not a word, but I'm going to go with it. So, it sets me off that that people put him in this box of evil, he cheats on you. No, he kind of moved on to somebody who deserves him. Somebody better.
Snaps. I would snap right now, but my noise canceling would block it out. And isn't there a scene in which Shepard smacks Jacob?
Yes. In the Citadel DLC, where you can go on the one-on-one interaction with Jacob, Femshep confronts him and you have the option, you pull a renegade interrupt, I believe. I've only watched the scene one time because I find it deplorable. You hit him across the face, and his response to that is, yeah, I probably deserved that.
That makes me want to cry just hearing that. Like, because that's like so representative of the abuse in abusive relationships.
Thank you. Because not a lot of people realize that if your immediate response to violence is, I deserved that, that's somebody who's been hit before.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see exactly where you're coming from then with, thinking that, you know what, Shepard is really the one in the wrong here, and Shepard is the one to blame for the dissolution of that relationship. Now, if you were saying that Shepard really pushes this relationship unlike past the point where Jacob has kind of set up a wall, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is not the only relationship for Fim Shep in which that is the dynamic. Isn't that also the dynamic with James Vega? And there's kind of a problematic scene in Citadel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's like a whole nother tirade about how Vega talks about how this is just flirtation, this is just my personality, please don't take this seriously. And I know a lot of people like that. I'm a people like that, a flirtatious and flamboyant and out there, but when it really comes down to it, that's not it, you know? So you have that conversation with Vega, and yet Shepard continues to push it further and further, still flirting back with him, taking things seriously. And then you get to the Citadel DLC, and you get Vega drunk, completely wasted, to the point that when he wakes up the next morning, he instantly regrets his decision and says that he wishes he could forget.
Wow. I've never seen that scene. And that's okay. So that's, I can see why people might have a problem with that. Especially if it's like a continued theme from Vega and Jacob, apparently. I never did either romance. But yeah, both, as Resident Moon here says in chat, it makes you feel icky. I feel icky hearing about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can definitely see why that qualifies as a hot take, considering most people blame Jacob, but they also, I would guess, blame Vega for flirting too much. That's just a guess. I'm not too versed in Vega's romance sphere on the internet. I guess I will become so, because I'm sure there's gonna be some kind of comments. But okay.
The worst part about the Vega thing is Shepard goes, okay, we can forget about it, just go and make me some eggs. And then it leads to that next scene of Vega in the kitchen asking everybody, you want some eggs? You want some eggs? Here, Liara, eat some eggs. Everybody, eat some eggs. Because Shepard told him to go get your ass in the kitchen and make me eggs.
Wow. Okay, so as someone who regularly plays male Shep and never romances Vega, even on the couple of Fim Shep playthroughs I did, that eggs thing just kind of came out of nowhere, the egg scene. And now knowing the line that leads up to it is kind of crazy. Wow, I don't know how I feel about that. But all right, moving on, away from less comfortable topics, what do you think makes Mass Effect lore different from any other game series? And perhaps your answer is the fact that we can be uncomfortable when talking about the themes in a totally fictional sci-fi universe.
I think for me, the fact that I actually cared about the lore made its first big impact difference to me. I'd played RPGs in the past, you know, I'm an Oblivion girl. I played Skyrim. I played Witcher. I've played a lot of different video games, but I'm a notorious dialogue skipper. I would just
really
go through the motion. Yeah, I know.
I did not know this about you. This is okay. Wow. Who am I talking to right now? No, like, okay, so you're a dialogue skipper in like every game besides Mass Effect?
Not every game. I don't dialogue skip in Cyberpunk. I didn't in Dragon Age, and I didn't in Mass Effect. But, like, it. Once I got to a point in the storyline, once I figured out where it was going, and then I would just kind of read the subtitles really quick and skip through it until I got to the next, like, decision I had to make or the next quest to go through. I actually cared. I cared about the dialogue that was going on. I cared about learning more about Turians. I wanted to learn more about Asari. I wanted to learn all of these different things. And I think that's really what set it differently to me, is that it was intriguing enough to hold my attention. It was in-depth enough to keep me on my toes of not knowing what the next thing was going to be. And then it was also fun and flirty and lighthearted in some points. So yeah,
it does. It does. The trilogy does a really great job of pacing like that, you know, balancing out the very dark, grim aspects in Mass Effect 3 with lighthearted, fun moments. And it does keep you interested. I think that the trilogy got significantly better throughout the games from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, in terms of pacing, cinematic pacing, mm-hmm. that is, and keeping you engaged. But yeah, I fully agree. I was like so hooked from the get-go, and I cared about these characters. I remember, this is the moment that I remember that Mass Effect had its hooks in me. I remember thinking, and I must have been a teenager, like mid-teens at this point, after playing Mass, or during my playthrough of Mass Effect 1, I think I'd finished the Mass Effect 1 game and I was waiting for Mass Effect 2 to come out. And I remember laying in bed one night and thinking, I wonder what the characters of Mass Effect are doing. And then I was like, Sam, stop. They're not real. You have a problem. Please stop going down that line of thought. But yeah, I think that's when I knew, I was like, this game has its hooks in me a lot. I've never thought about fictional characters like outside of the setting in which I'm consuming that media. So yeah, I totally get it. Okay, so that being said, you mentioned that you skip dialogue in other games. What kind of games do you like outside of Mass Effect?
Anything that has combat, conversation, and a little bit of, how to put this, romance and intrigue. I like, we'll go with that. So
Colonel Sanders Dating Simulator is one of your top played games then?
I've actually completed that game. I completed it on stream.
I didn't know that. That's amazing. Okay.
Yeah. I love you, Colonel Sanders, a finger licking good time. Yeah, no, I definitely played that. Fun has combat in it, by the way. But yeah, no, any game that I can, that breaks up, I'm not very good at visual novels. Anything that's just like pure storyline, that's not for me. It's not going to keep my attention. But games that have a really good combat system, I need something to keep the action actually going. Then having conversation that brings characters together, that develops the storyline outside of just exposition. This is why we're doing what we're doing. No, I need more than that. And throwing in romance on top of it, where you can actually build a deeper emotional connection with the characters, is just like the absolute cherry on top. I've played a lot of video games. I've talked about Oblivion, Skyrim, Cyberpunk, Baldur's Gate 3 definitely got its hooks into me. Bad.
And if you're if you're not watching the stream, she's saying this as she is flanked behind her by pictures of Astarion. Well, two of them, one of them a black and white sketch, and on the other side looks like a game poster. And there's another more risque Astarion with a shirt draped around his shoulder, and looks quite saucy looking over his shoulder.
Yep. Being currently covered up by a Tally scarf.
I think
Thank
I was
you.
Actually with you when you bought that at PAX.
You were?
Yeah. So, okay. Well, that's fun. So where do you see, you know, like the future of Mass Effect going? Because there hasn't been a game, a new Mass Effect game in 7 to 8 years, almost 8 years at this point, and that was Andromeda. You know, it's been 13 mm-hmm. years since the last, trilogy, and I'm not counting Legendary Edition because it's just, you know, a remake. But, you know, yeah. 13 years since the last, since Mass Effect 3, almost eight years since Andromeda. Where do you see the future of this game series going?
I want to believe that they are somehow combining the two timelines. That poster, I know that not everybody believes that that's kind of where it's going, but the fact that we saw Angara on that N7 jacket poster, I want that. I found the Angara really intriguing. I loved the idea of having, you know, the Andromeda galaxy and the Milky Way galaxy somehow being able to combine to communicate, even if it is still set in, I don't know how the timeline would work on that if we were still in the Andromeda galaxy, because we saw Volus, we saw species on the Ark that weren't there yet. But that could also be a part of the next game. I also kind of don't really want to know yet until the developers, until the writers, until the people who created the stories that you and I have both loved to be the ones to put that out. My speculations are only going to bring up my own level of hope, my own ideas, and then I'm going to get mad when it's not what I want. No. Let them do what they want, and then I'm either going to love the story or not. But by the past, I've loved what they put out before. I'm probably going to at least very much like what you do in the future.
Yeah, fully agreed here. I've ranted about that to no end, even in our private conversations, that the level of hopium that comes from content, and not necessarily just content from the studio, but like other like content creators like me, where we talk about the future so much that we get this idea in our minds, and then eventually what comes out doesn't fit that idea, and so we're disappointed. I mean, you're one of the hosts of the Cyberpunk Lorecast. You get it, right? So that was like...
There is no hope. No hope in Night City.
Yeah, well, at least that's on brand. But yeah, I totally get it. Where do I see it going, and where do I want it to go? Two separate questions, but, you know, if people want to hear about that, I guess they can go back and listen to the last N7 Day episode, or the N7 Day before that, if you want to find Bitter Sam, Bitter N7 Legend. Bitter N7 Legend from 2 N7 Days ago, and then, like, a little bit more placated N7 Legend the next year, if that's what you're into. Okay, so we're almost at the minute break, but I do have one more question. And there's a very famous Barbara Walters question. This is how she would wrap up a lot of interviews. If you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be and why?
Bradford pear. For those, if you know, you know. But no, not really. A sugar pine.
So I don't know. Pine. Can you explain to me the Bradford pear? No? She's shaking her head.
Nope.
No.
No.
Okay.
All right. I'll go with sugar pine. It's an evergreen. It's stable. It's native to the Pacific Northwest, and it's got pretty red bark.
Oh, okay. Well, I love that answer. There's no wrong answer to that question, and I guess anyone can play along if they were listening. Oh, what kind of tree would you be? I've been asked that question, and my answer has differed throughout the years, and more recently I want to say that I'm probably just an oak tree, boring but reliable. So like Ned Flanders, howdy doody. Anyway, let's go to the mid-break, shall we?
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer, the foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepherd.
Grunt?
Shepherd.
Rex? Grunt?
Okay, and now we're in the mid-break. I hope you enjoy the new mid-break sounders. I just made those because those sounders, I actually use modding tools to pull dialogue files from the game. So I set those up. that was tailor-made, basically. I consulted with Genesis, and I was like, okay, what are some of our favorite lines from the game series, and how do we put these in here? I had to teach myself basically how to use the Legendary Explorer modding tool. For those of you who are not familiar with it, I'm basically going into the game files. I'm finding the exact line of dialogue. I'm exporting all of the lines of dialogue per game into an Excel spreadsheet. I'm putting that in my Google Drive, and then I'm cross-referencing that with an asset database. So this is extremely... it's a lot of work, basically, for what amounts to a lame joke. But here we are in the midbreak, and we have a planet card. This one is Junther. And why don't we take turns reading this, Genesis? I'll start with the first paragraph here. Junther is a large terrestrial planet with a thick atmosphere of carbon dioxide and chlorine. The surface is mainly composed of aluminum with deposits of nickel.
Surveyors found the ruins of a technical civilization near the equator. Evidently, the colony of an ancient spacefaring race. Sorry, this is cat zone, apparently.
Yes, the ruins Maya, had... her cat, is currently harassing her.
The ruins had subsided to almost nothing, merely wind-hollowed husks of arcologies and other megastructures. In the center of the ruins was a single column whose inscriptions defied translation for several centuries.
When Asari linguists finally managed a translation, the elaborate relief carvings said merely, quote, "Walk among these works and know our greatness," end quote. The crude scratches on the base of the reverse side said, "Monsters from the Id." Now, I picked this planet card because when I was reading through this, I mean, it's a clear reference to the poem Ozymandias, right? And if you're unfamiliar with that poem, it's the origin of the phrase, look on our works, ye mighty, in despair. That's where that comes from. This poem is meant to show that even the so-called greatest among us in civilization are not as strong as their own hubris is. And I love that they threw in this reference because it is one of these echoes of hard sci-fi from the original Mass Effect 1 game that I just love so much. I think that's one of the things that really hooked me into Mass Effect. And sadly, I think it lost it a little bit from one installation to the next. And you feel that going back from Mass Effect 3 or Andromeda back to 1. But I also found it to be extremely fitting for multiple groups in Mass Effect, this message of that, you know, having this huge hubris, and then that hubris is represented in dust. So I found it, you know, represented in multiple groups like the Asari, but of course the Reapers too, right? I mean, you remember that original Sovereign speech about him being invincible and there was no end and no beginning, and I always have been. Shut up, we know how you were created. But there's an argument also to be made that, and I know that you're not going to like this, but that the Krogan also apply, this applies to the Krogan, pre-Genophage Krogan.
I agree with that. No, I'm not going to argue on it. I was also going to say that it's very Prothean as well.
Very much so. I didn't even think about that. That's a great point. Yeah. So, I was going to say, do you want to defend that for those of us who did not have the From Ashes DLC? They might be confused about what you're talking about.
Very Prothean about. I mean, it's like Jovik's whole thing is that they were great. They were these. They had advanced technology. They molded the Asari. They uplifted them, and then. Of course, the Protheans were wiped out as well. And all we have from them is the rubble and the ruins of their once great and mighty civilization.
Right. Time makes fools of us all, right? Or skeletons of us all, I guess you could say. But yeah, amazing point. As for reviews in this week, we don't have any new reviews. But as a reminder to everybody, if you submit a 5-star review and you tell us if it's not on Apple's Apple Podcasts, or if it's not in the Spotify comments, if it's on some alternative podcatcher, let us know. Maybe you can send it over email, and then we can read it out aloud on the mid-break of the show. And we're also here to shout out our Tier 5 patrons, William, Superfly440, Red T Robot, Lieutenant Tucino, Kira C, Ed Boy, and Draco. And we also have a Tier 6 patron, Commander Shrinky Shep. Holy cow. Commander Shrinky Shep, thank you so much for signing up for the Tier 6 Reaper Tier patron. And what that means for everyone who is unfamiliar is that Commander Shrinky Shep will actually be able to choose the topic of not the next Lorecast, actually this will be the next episode that we record this on, where Commander Shrinky Shep has chosen that he wants to hear about the indoctrination theory. So how cool is that? We are finally going to be covering that. He is actually going to join us on the episode. Thank you again so much to all of our patrons for all of the support that you give us. And if you're thinking about becoming a patron, now is the good time to do it, because we are celebrating a new year, new me, M-E, Lorecast, get it? So if you sign up on the Patreon through the end of January, you will get 50% off your first month. And that's just a promotion that we're doing for the month of January. Wanted to thank anyone who's willing to give us that kind of support so that we can go on and continue producing these very high quality episodes, might I add. And they became just so much, you know, better in this new year. But anyway, if you choose to help us out monetarily, it's very much appreciated. If you don't, that's totally okay. We just want your time. So thank you for listening to us. And if you want to just help us out as kind of like the simplest, most effective way, actually, just tell your friends. Be like, hey, I know you like Mass Effect, so check out this podcast when you got the time. Anyway, I think that's it for the mid-break on this week, so let's get back to the show, and we got another brand new sounder for everybody.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Salarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
And we're back. So let's talk about Rex, maybe. What a segue. Anyway, it's a new topic for you and me. A shout out to Salt and Peppa there. So yeah, we are going to resume our lore episodes right now with some details about Rex in Mass Effect 2, right?
Yeah, let's talk about all the good things and the bad things Rex may bring. Let's talk about Rex.
Maybe. Okay, so Rex is not really in like a whole lot of Mass Effect 2, right? So like, I think when you were researching this, Genesis, you found that Rex, how long is the actual, if you were to put all of the clips of dialogue from Rex back to back to back to back from Mass Effect 2, how long is that?
About 10 and a half minutes.
That's it. And that, yeah, that includes all permutations of the dialogue wheel and whatnot, so.
I don't know if that's okay. There were like three conversations that you could go with a different option to start with. So maybe 11 minutes total, okay, if you went through every permutation.
11 max. But yeah, as anyone who knows, you know, who played through Mass Effect 2 knows, there's just not a lot of Rex in Mass Effect 2. And that's because he's busy doing clan chief shit, because he just likes being a clan chief instead of a mercenary now. But let's get into a little bit of that. We have a clip here from Jaguar 550, now Commander Vicarian on YouTube, who is very prolific in uploading gameplay. So special props to them. And let's go ahead and pull this up. And it's part of when we first land on Tuchanka, right? So this is when we first land on Tuchanka. And sorry, we're gonna fix this live. We're gonna fix it live. This is when we first land on Tuchanka. And we don't really know a lot about what we're walking into, and we're greeted with a very familiar face.
Halt. You must wait till the clan leader summons you. He is in
talks.
You
know what tradition demands. Clan Erdnot must respond. Your reforms will not go unopposed. You risk appearing weak at a critical time.
Shepard.
Good enough? Excuse me.
Out of my... Shepard! My friend.
And there it is. Shepard! That's not the origin of that one. That one's from the Citadel DLC. But you get my point. I mean, this is like the warmest welcome I think Rex may have ever given anybody.
It is. It's so sweet. Even though, I mean, you see Rex sitting in the classic Conan the Barbarian stance of, this isn't a throne that I'm completely comfortable with, but I'm going to take it because it's required of me. And then he sees Shepard and all of that. He shoves people out of the way and even says it under his breath, out of my way. And then, Shepard, my friend.
And I think it makes sense.
Great reuniting.
It makes sense at this point because, like, for all intents and purposes, Shepard is part of Rex's Krant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I mean, they survived already what was a suicide mission, trying to take on Saren and then going to, you know, basically being exposed to the vacuum of space inside the closed Citadel arms, killing Saren, defeating a Reaper. I mean, like, yeah, they definitely bonded at this point. What I'm kind of surprised by is that Rex isn't more surprised that Shepard is alive, because Rex had heard Shepard's supposed to be dead.
I don't know if I left it in, but Rex forgot that Shepard is human and not Krogan. And it says, oh, your redundant systems must have kicked in. Thinking that, of course, Shepard survived. The redundant body parts kicked in, and that's what made him survive.
I like to think that Rex knows that he was just kind of making, like, a joke to try and break the ice. That, like, yeah, like, I know you're dead. Probably not the place to talk about it right now. But maybe he was being, like, dopey and serious.
Well, you know what? Rex also didn't know that humans don't have redundant organs. Do you know everything about the anatomy of a random animal you see?
Good point, but he does know that humans are squishy. And he does know that other races are... he knows which races are squishier than others. And Quarians, surprisingly resilient, he says. Let's talk a little bit about, like, how much of a transition this is for Rex as a character just right off the bat that we're seeing from Mass Effect 1 in talking to him in the hangar bay.
It's definitely, it's an expected growth, because for me, I could tell Rex was influenced, just as everybody else was on the Normandy, by Shepard and their actions. Seeing Shepard fight against and stand up to the council, not diminishing the fact like, oh, like that's my pet Krogan that we're just bringing along for battle missions, but having Rex be a valuable part of their team And just, I see Shepard's influence giving Rex the confidence and the status that he would have needed to go back to Chuchanka and say, I was there on the Citadel when this happened. You are going to listen to me. Because if you listen to me, then I can bring the Krogan back to where we need to be and be respected by the Council.
And, you know, going into this conversation, there's a lot about Rex's development that Shepard doesn't quite know. And like you mentioned, that Conan the Barbarian kind of stance on the throne, I'm imagining Shepard is also kind of confused by this, walking into this situation where Rex is all of a sudden on a throne. Last thing Shepard knew was that Rex was just a mercenary. So, I mean, let's check out the next clip where Rex kind of talks a little bit about this.
You look well for dead, Shepard. Should have known the Void couldn't hold you.
Looks like helping me destroy Saren and the Geth has worked out for you. Glad we didn't have to kill each other on Vermeer.
Huh. You made the rise of Erdnot possible. Vermeer was a turning point for the Krogan, though not everyone was happy about it. Destroying Saren's genophage cure freed us from his manipulation. I used that to spur the clans to unify under Erdnot.
You abandoned many traditions to get your way. Dangerous.
Speak when spoken to, Uvenk. I'll drag your clan to glory whether it likes it or not.
Oh, and there is the Krogan headbutt. And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that the first instance of Krogan headbutt that we see in Mass Effect? Or am I wrong? I might be wrong. I didn't think we saw any animated Krogan headbutts in Mass Effect 1.
Ooh, now you're testing my intricate lore.
This is a really obscure detail for everybody. And by the way, because we don't know this off the top of our heads, we must not be real lore masters, since, you know, apparently we claim to be.
I don't think that it is. I feel like there is an enemy or two in ME1. There has to be a Krogan headbutt.
Okay. Yeah, probably as an attack. I was thinking more of like a cinematic animation, like inside the dialogue scenes. But yes, you're right. In terms of combat, that animation definitely happened. And I remember getting creamed by Krogan before. Anyway.
Getting creamed by a Krogan.
That's it, folks. No. So, getting back to what Rex is talking about, he's taking on this leadership role. He's unifying the clans, and he's going to, quote-unquote, drag them to greatness whether or not they like it. Yeah, quote-unquote. So, hold on. I'm holding up my fingers as a Krogan would, with three fingers. So, quote-unquote. What do you make of this, considering that he just came from, like, the most independent of professions where you are truly a one-man team?
I personally love this growth and development for Rex. I feel like, as I was saying before the clip, that it felt like a natural progression for him. And it felt like this is what he was building up towards. He didn't want to be just the mercenary anymore, because he talked about that in the hangar bay in ME1, about how he was sick of seeing all the young Krogan leaving Tuchanka and not to go out there and better themselves or to bring back resources or to do anything to better the Krogan as a whole, but for their own personal gain instead. And so he let us know that this was where he wanted to go, but just not in outright blatant terms.
And in order to do this, he must have, like, you know, really pushed the envelope. Like, how exactly would he rally the clans like this? Because we know from the Krogan, you know, socio-political situation that they're not exactly easily corralled or controlled, and they are very headstrong. So, you know, he talks about these things, and we have a clip here that illustrates some of the tactics that he uses. Let's listen to a little bit of this.
Sounds like you've got big changes ahead for the Krogan.
We are making a neutral ground where all clans are welcome. Fertile females can be shared among clans. We will strengthen the race as a whole.
You threaten everything that makes us strong. It will not last.
Maybe. Until then, you're lucky to be a part of it.
How do you maintain security with so many different clans in one place?
Any clan willing to send in hostages can come in. No fighting inside the camp. Each clan punishes its own criminals. We stop conflicts before anyone dies. Then we present a simple choice. Pay a fine and deal with your problems, or your clan is no longer welcome.
Okay, so I'm going to pause it right there because it sounds to me like Rex is actually pushing criminal justice reform in the Krogan, like, social structure, right? He's saying, pay a fine, deal with your problems, or your clan's no longer welcome. Basically, the punishment he's wielding against them is isolation, right?
Yeah, isolation, banishment, or, I mean, in the Krogan way, that's probably not how it actually goes, but you got to get your aggression out somehow. They're probably just killing them. But it's effective. The policing your own people in this type of situation is what seems to work for them.
It is. And it almost sounds like it's introducing a little bit, just a little bit of order to something that was relatively lawless before, where, yeah, he's probably not going to be liked too much for this. But it also reminds me of the reason why he and his dad, Jared, fought. Like, Rex was more interested in trying to rally the Krogan clans to try and improve the efficacy of their government, their society, whereas his dad was just interested in fighting. Do you think that Uvank has a lot of support in how Uvank feels, or is he just, as depicted here, just kind of like the comedic relief that is there to get headbutted?
I feel like that's like the, I don't think he's there for just the comedic relief. Trust me, I love headbutting him and will always do it given the opportunity with my shepherd. But it is the opposition. It is reminding you, and if you didn't play Mass Effect 1 and didn't know what the Krogan were like, if you jumped straight into 2, he's also there to kind of inform you, this is what the Krogan used to believe in. Do you see how radical Rex is being in this reform, in this change? I could definitely feel like a lot of support would still go his way, but Rex is going to get results.
Yeah. And I feel like the harsh tactics like headbutting and the more authoritarian tactics, maybe it might be more necessary for that society, at least at this point in time. I don't know. I feel like we kind of have to take a step back and trust that Rex knows what's best here, because Rex is how old by this point? I don't even know. He's like a lobster. He can't really die from old age, but
I believe he's 700-ish.
Right, given what he says about the Krogan rebellions. So I feel like he knows his society pretty well, and it still seems like relatively he's viewed as being too soft. So maybe he's doing that to kind of combat that perception. Maybe he's doing it as a necessity anyway, and maybe the occasional headbutt is relatively soft for the Krogan. Who knows? But there's a lot of reforms he's making. And he talks a little bit more about, you know, how this is going.
That doesn't sound very harsh by Krogan standards.
Allies from other clans like what I'm doing. They help deal with skeptics. Many are eager for an outlet. Every time I've declared a clan unwelcome, my allies have destroyed them. Word gets around.
What do the women of Clan Erdnot think about this plan?
It was our female clan leader's idea.
The neutral area is safe, and it encourages more female clans to ally with us. Attacks on Erdnot now endanger the females of all clans. Even clans that want to see me dead will defend Clan Erdnot.
Okay, so he's essentially, I can imagine his political enemies accusing him of wielding the women of the Krogan species as being like kind of a human shield, right? Or a Krogan shield.
Yes. I don't like that terminology. I'm definitely not here for that. I feel like, and the women have their own stance. They have, I don't know. You caught me off guard on that one.
I am playing the devil's advocate right now. Yeah. I'm playing Uvink's advocate.
Uvink's advocate. Yeah, no, the female Krogan, although we don't see them in Mass Effect 2, have their own clan structure and have their own power that they hadn't previously been able to wield properly. And now Rex is giving them that opportunity. And I think it's beneficial, obviously.
I definitely wouldn't say that it's a fair attack or criticism on Rex's part, but I can definitely see Rex's political enemies wielding that and accusing him of that. What I find interesting, though, is that Rex has apparently brokered a lot of key allies and a lot of key companions, companion tribes who like the reforms that he's going with. And so what I find interesting here is that it's almost like the Krogan society is becoming more democratic. Like, Rex is gaining political power because people approve of his ideas.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And he's getting support in so many different levels with so many different clans, so many different cultures within those clans. And, I mean, this is why we love Rex. You know?
He's also kind of proving wrong the xenophobic and racist stereotypes that the council races throw at the Krogans over and over again, that they're wild savages incapable of governing themselves, right? Where have we heard that before? That they are just devoid of any kind of future, and although not to be trifled with, you know, just don't give them anything either. Where Rex is proving this wrong. I would not be surprised if we find out in the next couple games that the council had been secretly plotting, or at least some council races have been secretly plotting, to try and overthrow Rex to keep the Krogan destabilized.
Ooh, that's not one that I had thought of before. I don't like that idea.
Well, because a stable Krogan wouldn't be dependent on the Citadel's help, and they also wouldn't be as threatened by the Citadel's military.
True, but I'm also wondering if what Rex has done with Shepard and gives him that stability in it, but in a world state where Reeve is the leader of the Krogan, then that could be definitely a ploy.
Yeah. Well, we have a little
this,
bit.
While this,
I was going to say, we have a little bit more to talk about, because Rex tells us a little bit more of his plans with Krogan restructuring. Let's give this a listen right now.
What's so important about maintaining individual clans?
Every clan has different customs, rites of passage, rules of behavior, battle songs, all unique. That diversity makes us great. No clan, not even mine, was meant to survive on its own.
Erdnot is the leading clan. Doesn't that make your culture primary?
For now. But every clan has its unique assets. The best tacticians are Erdnot. Chorgal has the longest breeding line. Gatatog holds the oldest settlement. Others have their own strengths. We keep going how we are. The clans will end up as craters under nuclear haze. Even Erdnot. We need to rethink. Restart.
Sounds ambitious. How's it gone so far?
Better than I'd feared. Worse than I'd hoped.
It can't continue.
You are going against what makes us strong.
Sounds like you're not making friends.
Traditionalists like Uvenk are chained Varan, always fighting, guiding their pathetic stick in the ground. When the smoke clears, I can plant the flag on their corpses and rally the rest around a new Krogan hub.
Okay, so what is from Rex's disposition there?
I may have grown a heart, but I'm still Krogan.
Mm.
That's what I get from that. I'm not soft. I've evolved. I've seen what we can become, but that doesn't mean that my headplate is any softer. I'm still Krogan.
Right. And it also kind of shows us that he is keeping his head on a swivel, that he is well aware that people will probably try to usurp him.
He's expecting it. Absolutely. Yeah. But he's still going to stand on the pile of corpses.
But he's like not batting an eye whatsoever. He's like, yeah, you can. I'd like to see you try. You know, you can try and usurp me, but I'll be standing on your corpse and I'll plant the flag there. This guy has like balls of steel.
Yeah, all four of them.
It's just like the Newton's cradle, but with Krogan balls going back and forth on the Krogan throne in Tuchanka. That's our description of Rex. And this episode is getting an explicit tag.
Yeah, probably.
Yep.
I was like, we haven't sworn yet. I've been good. No F-bombs this time.
So, like, Genesis, that's like kind of the gist of what we get from Rex in Mass Effect 2, right? There's not, like, a lot of other time with him on the screen.
No, the rest of the time that we get with Rex is about Grunt and his rite of passage into adulthood. And we are definitely going to talk about everyone's favorite sociopathic teenage toddler in future Grunt episodes.
Yes.
Because Grunt is my son.
Bring on the Grunt! I cannot wait. I cannot wait for the Grunt episodes. But we do have more Rex episodes before that. So thank you for pulling together these clips. And I am just so excited to have you on board the show. I'm so excited about the future of this show. Speaking of which, the immediate future, we're going to be doing the indoctrination theory episode, like I had mentioned. I can't wait to talk with you and Commander Shrinky Shep about that. We have our homework ahead of us for that one, because I'm going to try and track down the original source of whoever laid out this indoctrination theory, whoever the first person was, if it can be traced to a single person. And I'm learning that it must have been on the BioWare forums, the now dead ones. So I'm going to try and track down the source. If anyone listening to this has any idea and can point me in the right direction, I'd love to be able to talk to that person. But yeah, other than that, it's just going to be me and you, and we're going to lay out the theory, and then we're going to talk with Commander Shrinky Shep, who, by the way, is a trained psychiatrist, so who can help really, like, decode Shepard's mental illnesses, or at least this is what I'm imagining that conversation going like, and talk about, you know, what is going on in Shepard's mind, what symptoms of what mental illnesses might we be seeing develop in Shepard, and what does the psychiatrist think, ultimately, about whether or not Shepard might be indoctrinated?
Oh, this is going to be really good. I am very excited for this conversation. I know that you and I have definitely talked indoctrination theory over the last 3 years. So it's going to be interesting to compile all of our notes together and have a good formal conversation about it. The fact that our newest patron, who also gets a super special shout out at the end of every episode, Commander Shrinky Shep, thank you so much. This is going to be very fun and very interesting. Maybe next week the board in the background will be all Charlie Day with the red string going all over the place. Yes, we need the cork board.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for Rex and Mass Effect 2 today. After Indoctrination Theory, we are going to be going back to Rex and Mass Effect 3. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about then, too. So we have got a dense January planned ahead for us, probably going into February as well. But yeah, that's all we have for this week, Spectres. Hopefully you're enjoying the new show format a little bit. And we'll see you next week. Take care. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.